I have met so many families that have lost loved ones to police shootings who discretionarily find me, look for me, take years to pitch their case to me. And that's really not the way the system should work. We should, immediately something goes bad, we should have an independent law enforcement agency to hit the scene and build that case immediately, not take years and years for these cases to build.
That's New Mexico Attorney General Hector Balderas. New Mexico has the second highest rate of fatal police shootings in the country, with 50 per million residents. Only Alaska has more, with 53 per million residents. Today, we talk about policing. And Doñana County Sheriff Kim Stewart joins us to answer our questions and yours. We'll get started right after NPR News. Voice of the Public from KRWG Public Media. This is KC Counts. It is 1:06. Good afternoon. This is KC Counts with Voice of the Public from KRWG Public Media. So pleased to be able to welcome Doñana County Sheriff Kim Stewart to the show this afternoon. Good afternoon, Sheriff Stewart.
Good afternoon, KC. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, thank you for accepting our invitation. I will be honest, it wasn't easy. We asked a few area top law enforcement officials to come on, and so I want to say thank you being the only one to accept our invitation.
Anytime I get a chance to speak directly, so to speak, to the public, I appreciate it.
Well, and we want you to do that literally today. 646-2212 is the number you can call if you have a question for Doñana County Sheriff Kim Stewart. That's 575-646-2212. We have discussed briefly that some of the topics we'd be covering today are among those that we're hearing in the national conversation. Police reform and how it applies right here in New Mexico. But we also want to break it right down into our neighborhoods. And we want people to be able to call in and talk to you about issues that they might be having in the areas of the county where they live and what help they might need from the Doñana County Sheriff's Department. So that's a little bit of the scope of what we'll be talking about today. And I want to begin with your impression of what we're seeing around the country. And yes, the fact that New Mexico actually does have the second highest rate of fatal police shootings in the country behind Alaska. What do you think is the reason for that?
Well, let's be real. If I knew that, I could probably set my own schedule every day at least, because those are really significant questions and concerns, but it is important to, as you say, narrow it down to our locality. I realize a lot of those numbers are driven by the Albuquerque Bernalillo area. They are not driven locally. Yes, there certainly the municipalities in our county have had some issues with this, and we've had a couple of non-lethal events. But by and large, I think where you're getting into higher concentrations of the population, there's more close contact. I think you're going to see a lot of these issues are happening with large departments. So we're a little bit isolated. I think we're in a better position. We're in a better position to create a more one-on-one contact with the public we serve. We tend to know who we respond to and who we serve. We may not know them from every call during the week, but somebody is usually related to somebody or has some kind of relationship to the deputy who may answer a call. So I think that just that a little bit of familiarity probably does a lot to make our situation here, thankfully, a lot different.
Interestingly enough, that small town mentality of where we all know each other was one of the reasons that Mayor Ken Miyagishima said on Issues and Answers the other day that he wasn't necessarily supportive of something like a citizen review panel to look over and investigate complaints against officers. Has that been discussed in your department?
Not specifically. When I was running for office, I looked quite a bit at those on a national basis, knowing full well there wasn't one locally for either the police or us. And one of the things I found with them is there is no real best practice as to how there's no consensus about best practice as to how and who should be on it and how they should run and so forth. So I came away with thinking to myself that until we have a clearer picture of just exactly who would be on these commissions or committees and who, how much voice they would have and what kind of prior knowledge of law enforcement would they need to have to sit on the board, or could they come onto a committee or an organization without any prior knowledge, all those things play a role then in having them be determining factors or determining voices about policies and procedures going forward. So I wasn't real amenable, I guess, not because the idea isn't sound, but because it was hard to look across the country and say, hey, in this city, this commission, or in this state, it works very well. Hmm. There doesn't happen to be that type of consensus.
Interesting. 1-11 and 646-2212 is the number to call for Voice of the Public on KRWG today. Sheriff Kim Stewart, Doniana County Sheriff Kim Stewart, our guest in studio here to answer your questions. So feel free to call with whatever happens to be on your mind. One program that is made up of a combination of private citizens is a group called CAHOOTS, and I believe Eugene Orton is where this group works, and they are a group of social workers who help in responding to 911 calls and relieve some of the pressure that police face when they're dealing with folks who are having mental crises. Is that something that your department is looking into?
We are not necessarily, but you have to realize that being part of the county, we are being approached or addressed as to the crisis triage center.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the operation of that, let's not confuse the two things. The response to these calls for service in the public is different than managing and facilitating a crisis triage center, correct? They're not necessarily the same thing. So you can say, yes, we as the county have a discussion ongoing, but that has to do with actually operation. So let's look at our response to these calls. And I like to point out for everyone, we tend to encounter people in crisis very differently than do the city municipalities. Okay. They have locations, for instance, in the city of Las Cruces, where there may be more gathering. You know, there might be on El Paseo, the Circle K. You would end up in those types of law enforcement settings where you would more likely encounter folks who are in crisis, perhaps because they're also homeless.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to get calls where we have a person who is in crisis. He or she lives at home with other family members. The family members are frightened, or there's a neighbor calling because the person is screaming, whatever. But it tends to be in their own home. We're not a situation where we go out and encounter folks on the street routinely or in public. We tend to go into people's homes. So our response to these calls is quite different than more populated city policing activities. So that said, when you talk about crisis intervention and we talk about alternatives such as CAHOOTS or some of those, you have to tailor it to the kinds of calls we're getting or we get. And so what might be a nice fit for the city of Las Cruces may not be that good of a fit for us, or vice versa.
It has to be on an individual basis.
Yes.
Depending on the circumstances. Sure, understand that. Let's get to the phone, and thank you to Fred, who's been holding and waiting to get on to Voice of the Public. Good afternoon, Fred. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, thank you. No, I appreciate you being on, Sheriff. The just had a quick comment on the initial information as far as one of the highest fatality rates by law enforcement in the country, but at the same time we have high drug use in the entire state, high unemployment even before COVID. Our unemployment wasn't anywhere near the national average. Our education level, just all down the line, we don't rank high on the good things, but we rank very high on the bad things. And, I'll hang up, Sheriff, and you can answer to address that. And, are those possible, some of the issues that, people are breaking in, they're doped up. I see them right here, as you mentioned, in Las Cruces, all the time. And appreciate your answer. I'll go ahead and hang up. Thank you.
Thank you, Fred, for calling.
Yes, thank you, Fred. I think he points up to some of our concerns in law enforcement is that these are complex issues. Having quick solutions is not in our cards. That's not the handle with that to us. It is going to be, as he says, we have low quality in a lot of ways, education. We have people who are in crisis psychologically and then are self-medicating through drug or alcohol use. And then we have high unemployment. So that's kind of my concern where we, for instance, are going to go to Santa Fe and the answer is going to be body cams. Okay. These one size fits all kinds of situations, as I've mentioned earlier, aren't necessarily going to fit for us, nor will it fit for New Orleans, or nor will it fit for Des Moines, Iowa. So I think that having an eye towards the complexity of the problem, and then having a lot of interaction with the community and having their input about what they think are the answers. One of my platforms when I ran for office was the police don't tell you what you need. Okay, we're here to help you solve problems. So we go to you and say, okay, as he mentioned, three major problems. And then our task is to try to, well, which part of this or all of it or none of it can we positively impact? So it truly has to be a partnership with the community as to what they see as their problem. Our problems are very, very different from Albuquerque's. Very.
Are you? Did I get the sense that you are not necessarily in support of the idea of getting body cameras for all officers statewide?
No, my concern is that's not going to be the thing that fixes everything. And I just don't like it when it's sort of some of these get presented as this will fix it. Mm. No, it won't fix it. And it's going to be something where we have to, as a society, as a county, as a state, and so on, we have to keep our attention on the prize. Okay, the prize is a more livable county with a quality of life that is higher. That is not something we just handle this month and next month go on to another perceived or real problem. That's my concern with a lot of the talk about law enforcement. It took us a while to get here. It's going to take us a while to move into areas of positive change.
How will, right now, the deputies, are they wearing body cameras at all now?
No, we have car cameras.
Car cameras.
So, and we've had them, that I'm aware of, at least 6 years, maybe longer than that. And so they are quite used to at least the fact that there's a camera, and those activate automatically. So if the car goes over a certain speed or the lights and siren go on, they activate automatically. And that's something when you get body cams, you have to you know, that's something to consider. Will they activate automatically, or will they have to be pressed mm-hmm. to be turned on, kind of thing? But they're very used to, in fact, a lot of our deputies, when they're out, you might notice or not, that they will gravitate to the car to stay around the car mm-hmm. so that their activities are courted.
Yeah. You know, one thing that really might strike someone, it does me, is that in the wake of George Floyd's death, Officer Chauvin knew he was being filmed mm-hmm. and continued. What was your impression in the days and weeks following that incident?
I'm probably focused on things people wouldn't necessarily think about. But my first question, and I know it may seem trivial, but I have never heard of anyone being arrested for passing a counterfeit 20 mm-hmm. because we do not have that authority. That is federal law. That is a Secret Service function. We don't do anything with that. So my first thought, to be honest with you, was why did this even get to the point where he was handcuffed and placed in the car? That was a mystery to me. So when it came out that later on he may have known and probably did know this person from another setting, off-duty setting, my thought was there is definitely more to this than meets the eye.
There was a bar owner who came out in the days after that incident and said that they had both worked for her during the same time.
Correct. And there was an issue over who was controlling the paychecks or something. Mm-hmm. And when you noticed the body language of this individual, Chauvin, and what he was doing, and he was, my take on it, he was totally unconcerned. He mm-hmm. knew he was, I think he was looking at the camera a lot of the time. He knew he was being mm-hmm. filmed. And then I, as an administrator, I learned that the two or three deputies or officers standing with him had, 3 days on the job? I don't even understand how did that even occur. And he was their training officer. I mean, the whole thing, I think I was looking more from an administrator, not that death wasn't horrible and uncalled for. And by the way, nobody's trained to do that. I'm sorry. I've done this or been around this business 40 years. Never seen that. So I will say that I was kind of mystified by a lot of the attendant issues around that suggested to me there were a lot of issues in that department long before that day.
Let's get back to the body cams just briefly. I want to ask you if there's an instruction on this at this point on acquiring them and funding for them, and do you have a timeline?
We do have a 90, it appears 90 days. I'm going to say that legislation was very broadly written, but we're assuming or counting on the fact that it's in the 90-day line. We started working on this actually when the legislation passed. We didn't wait for the governor to sign, which he did yesterday. So we've had about 8-10 more days on this. And then the guidelines are we must develop the guidelines. Now, bear in mind, we have guidelines for the car cameras, so we will be expanding the policy in short order to support the use of the lapel cameras, because you have to have that policy in order to be able to use those in the field. You cannot function without the policy.
646-2212. That's the number for KRWG's Voice of the Public. It is 124. Doniana County Sheriff Kim Stewart on the air with us today. 575-646-2212. If you have a question for Sheriff Stewart, so we still have so much territory to cover. And I did get a question in advance from a listener, so I have that for you now. The question is, does the sheriff's office have enforcement authority over the dry riverbed? If so, are pickup trucks and ATVs and dirt bikes allowed to drive down the dry riverbed? Her concern, anytime the river is not flowing, there are all manner of vehicles tearing it up. Birds and other critters need the riverbed and its banks for nesting and raising young, not to mention the riparian plant species. I don't even want to think about what's getting run over and destroyed.
Yes. No.
Yes and no.
Okay.
Yes.
We do not have legal authority. I'm going to explain that momentarily, but the International Water Boundary Commission, or Barter Water, I can't ever think, IBWC, mm-hmm. they are the ones that control the river bottom from levee to levee, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, we have an agreement with them that when called, we do provide enforcement, okay? And that enforcement is normally trespass, okay? That's normally the enforcement we would take. Now, the issue we have, and I'm sure your questioner recognizes this, is that there's a lot of river bottom, and there's a lot of unprotected river bottom. That is, the IBWC has not necessarily put signage in all these locations. They have not put gates to restrict or try to prohibit access and so forth. So the theory is that we should be enforcing these areas, while you got to consider we have from Sunland Park to Hatch, and I don't have that many deputies that can go out and just go up and down the river bottom day after day enforcing these essentially they're trespassers. Okay, mm-hmm. So we go when we're called, and we are frequently called, and we have met with IBWC very frequently to suggest some needed improvements to restrict access, to attempt to help us with some of those areas that legitimately you could restrict access. Let's be real. If you're going up to Hatch, we all know the areas you can get off the road and get over there into the river area. But the caller or the questioner has a very valid point, but know that it is not our jurisdiction. We assist them through an agreement, memorandum of understanding, but the other reality is I don't have the personnel that we can monitor these continually every day of the week and into the night, which is also the issue.
Of course.
So we have put out we have a volunteer mounted unit, and we have put them out on many weekends, and they spend going up and down, but they have no authority of enforcement. They can only educate those and tell them that they are trespassing.
I understand. Thank you for that. And Victor has been holding with a question. Good afternoon, Victor. Thanks for calling Voice of the Public. How are you?
Just fine, thanks. I'm calling from El Paso, and I really like listening to the sheriff. She sounds like very sensible and has a very sensible approach to law enforcement. However, on the body cam issue, it sounded like she at first was against it, but yet it sounds like you've got laws that are coming into effect where all police officers in New Mexico have to be wearing body cams. Is that correct?
That is correct. That is correct. Yes. And the governor just signed it in our state. And it's anyone who has the authority to enforce the law. So I have court security, though they are not fully commissioned deputies in that sense. They have limited powers only while in the courthouse. They also have to have body cams. So it's a fairly far-reaching legislation.
Well, I think it's great. We're in the 21st century. Video recording these incidents have just opened the door to a lot of things that otherwise would have been swept under the rug and have been. Can you imagine a lot of these incidents that came to the surface now, like George Floyd? In the past, without video, there would have been nothing. It would have been just put aside.
Yeah.
So I think now in the 21st century, body cams are so important in documenting what's going on out on the street or whenever an officer is having to make a call. You know, another issue that you raised was the Citizens Advisory Board. Do you have a civil service commission out there in Las Cruces or in Doña Ana County?
No. And many areas do have that. We do not. I do want to point out, we have a law enforcement academy board. And to me, if we wanted to get on top of this more quickly and really pursue some of these, that board in our state has the authority to commission or decommission certify officers. In other words, there are certain situations that if my deputy runs into a problem or a discipline, we must report to that board. And they actually have the say as to whether or not the commission is pulled, either suspended or pulled and permanently from our deputy. Now, to me, that's already the basis of a oversight commission. I think that staffing that in terms of financing it and in terms of having legislation that clearly defines who is in charge, because right now it's a little bit of a gray area with the Attorney General involvement, the Law Enforcement Academy Board Director is some involvement, but it really needs to be given the full authority because they have an awesome responsibility. And if they're behind and that board only meets four times a year and we're sitting on maybe 150 disciplines, well, you can be assured that those aren't going to be looked at very quickly. And yet those are people that have a badge and a gun. So that's a place we can begin. It's much like a civil service commission, as the gentleman, as Victor speaks to, but it's statewide, and we're a population of 2 million people. That ought to be more than adequate for our population.
All right. Victor, thanks for the call. Let's move on to our next caller. Marvin is holding to ask a question. Marvin, good afternoon. Thank you for calling Voice of the Public.
Yes, good afternoon. I'd like to preface my question to the chief by saying that I had recently seen a documentary called Women in Blue, and the premise of the documentary was to follow the police, a female police chief who headed the Minneapolis Police Department. So that said, I think I would, there was, like many documentaries, this thing covered the period quite close to where the recent George Floyd incident happened. And many things are quite eye-opening. If people get a chance, you're probably going to have to do it online to see it. I would highly recommend seeing this documentary.
Well,
my question for the chief is...
The sheriff.
I know you wanted to change policing, how policing was done in the county. And since I've only had one encounter with the county sheriff person in my 10 years, how would I know that you're making an impact? Because I think a lot of policing now is making an impact on the culture within the department. How would I know that you're making an impact on your department from that standpoint?
All right. Thank you, Marvin, for the question.
Good, very good question, Marvin. One of the things when I first ran, I said I was going to provide an annual report. And this year I did it in January verbally, and I gave that report to the BOCC, and it, of course, is televised. And what I spoke to in that was a number of things we had accomplished during the 2019, and it spoke not only to things the public could see, what was not seen, and such as the fact that we had no real ability to measure what we had done. So, for instance, I could finally say after 1 year we had done 65,000 calls, we had responded, and these are the nature of the reasons we responded, that we were trying to get in line. A lot of computer access we had but had never been trained and didn't know how to use the access. And he can say, well, you know, how... how is that benefiting the public? Well, it's a huge benefit when it comes down to us being able to do everything from serve process, which are evictions and all other types of protective orders, to following our cases through to the district attorney and the courts. It takes a lot of support effort to move our work through. From the time the deputy steps out of the car to the time that particular deputy's job is done, there are a lot of hands in the mix. So one of the things that I wanted to do is make it clear to the public that we are making changes that hopefully you'll see. We made a change right off the get-go. We changed the color of our pants, and that seemed a small matter. But when I was running for sheriff, a lot of the public told me that they did not wanted to differentiate us from Border Patrol. And they wore tan and green pants, and we made a fairly easy shift to tan and dark blue. And that was something immediate. We got immediate feedback that it was a very positive comment. Again, I don't want Marvin to think that, you know, some of these are all visible. He's right. Some of them are not visible. And it took a lot of examination of how things are done here. A lot of policing in this county was done on a 1980s model. So when I came in, my first task was to try to get us at least into the 2000s.
That's a pretty big leap there.
Yeah, we had to skip a few decades. So people say, well, you're against body cameras. No, I'm not. I love the fact that the county is going to fund $600,000 next Tuesday for us to have body cameras. It's just that we had some real basic priorities that we wanted to address.
And I'd like to get to those. But Mary's been holding, so let's get to the phone. 646-2212, 575-646-2212. Hi, Mary. Welcome to Voice of the Public.
Hi. My question is this. I've lived in Doniana for a little over 25 years, and I know from time to time there's been a shortage of deputies, and some of them have gone to the other side, the LCPD, but I was wondering how we're doing as far as recruitment.
We are so lucky. Thank you for asking, Mary. We are so lucky. We are at full contingency right now. My 150 deputies, that allotment was made actually years before I got in. The footprint of 150, I came in, I believe it was 120 and maybe 25, and we have more than filled our ranks at this point. We have people waiting to apply. We have people already signing up for the January 2021 Academy. So we've been incredibly lucky and somewhat resilient to the winds out there, so to speak, in that people are interested in coming to work for us. There were two things at play. One was I think they did encounter or did realize that we're taking bold steps, and it's a new day in Doniana County. And second of all, the base pay prior to me getting in here 1 or 2 years had increased to the point where it was far more commensurate or on parity with the other major agency, which is the police department and the state police. So I think those two things really have helped us keep healthy. We haven't actually had to go out and recruit. They've come to us. So that's
a good sign.
A plus.
Yeah. We have Patty on the line next, holding with a question for Sheriff Kim Stewart on Voice of the Public. Good afternoon, Patty.
Hi. Sheriff Stewart, you're kind around here. I wish we had more of you. I came in on the conversation when I was driving, so I didn't catch the whole thing. But, you know, the stuff you talk about is the stuff that's important, which is like community engagement. When you were saying, we, the police shouldn't tell you what to do, we should be telling them what we need. I've been so frustrated in my 4 years here. When I first got here, I went seeking mental health help, and it was so bad. And even while I was in visiting with the providers who were not qualified, they called the police on me, which I have a lot of trauma behind that. So currently 4 years here, and I'm not getting any kind of help for any of my mental health issues, and I wouldn't risk trying here again. So I'm in a real dilemma. But I'm also very fearful of, you know, as this whole thing after George Floyd, right in the middle of it, two blocks away from me, we have SWAT over and, you know, with man who was supposedly suicidal. Like I say supposedly, because when police have come out for me, I was not suicidal. And they ended up killing him. And so I fluctuate back and forth between just trying to stay alive every day and figure out how I'm going to get through this. And then looking and thinking, there's no hope here. There's no way for the public to be engaged with things. You know, you cover the county. We don't really have that in the city. And then I know 2 years ago I brought this up at City Hall about the rate of police killings in this city, and was just kind of shoo-shooed away. So, what can we do to increase that community engagement?
Patty, thank you so much for sharing your story. And there are so many others like you. And I know that Sheriff Stewart and I will probably both think about a couple of years ago when our entire mental health system statewide was basically shut down. But that is something that I did want to get back to. Earlier, we were talking a little bit about the crisis triage center. And I believe the gentleman's name was Michael Seltzer, if I'm not mistaken. He was 81 years old. And a neighbor called because he said he was suicidal, but had a weapon. And so this is just one of those questions where you say, what are our options here, right?
Yes, and, you know, because that was the city, and I don't have an insight or knowledge of that event. But, you know, one of the things I think that we're maybe getting a little closer to, and I say it guardedly, the city and the county, neither the city nor the county can do this alone, okay? They must come together and join resources to work together to get resources such as Mary's talking about, or excuse me, Patty was talking about, because none of us are large enough or wealthy enough, nor can we create an environment where providers want to be here. You know, we're challenged with medical care here, right? So, and part of that is because we have to be a place that providers want to live and work. So I think that we might be moving a little bit more in the direction from a couple of calls I've been on and committees where it's a win-win for the county and the city to begin to collaborate more closely, whether it be talking about opening crisis triage, or whether it's talking about mobile crisis intervention teams, which we've kind of the city has a little going on, and this entity has a little of that going on, but there's like not a real singular effort. And I have seen a little movement toward more of a singular effort, because no one entity is going to solve this problem. And that goes back to the very beginning when Fred called about all of these myriad of issues that we have. We will not be able to solve any of these alone. So what she's saying is, how can we get involved? I would really continually reach out to commissioners and city councilors and urge them to work as one with their other counterparts. Because in this county, something I've observed for the last decade is that we tend to be quite siloed. So you have a lot of organizations that are nonprofits working in towards sort of similar ends, but they don't necessarily join forces for various reasons. Well, that happens with city and county government as well. So we need to, you know, use our resources to our best advantage, and the only way we can do that is collaboratively.
Ellen is waiting on the line at 575-646-2212 to speak with Doñana County Sheriff Kim Stewart. This is Voice of the Public on KRWG. Good afternoon, Ellen.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Great. Thank you for calling.
I just wanted to compliment the sheriff. I served as a member of the Law Enforcement Academy Board for 5 years, and I was also their hearing officer. So I do understand the problems that they have. However, I live in Oregon, and we have the county sheriff up here. I will say that since she has become sheriff, things have gotten a little smoother up here, and hopefully those of us who are as old as I am feel more secure in their homes. I really and truly do, and it's just been remarkable the difference in the tone of policing that we have up here as it has been in the past.
Well, thank you very much for calling to share that.
Thank you, Ellen. Thank you very much. And thank you for your 5 years of service on the LEA board. That is no small feat.
It was fun.
Good.
All right. I want to ask about that. You know, talking about the tone, that leads me to wonder about morale in the department. How would you say the level of morale is, you know, and given everything that's going on?
Well, first of all, I've got to tell you that I tell my people that seeking good morale or achieving good morale is a daily effort. So today I'm going to say that I think we have very good morale overall. At least the feedback when I'm around and when I talk to our folks, and I had a sergeant drive me home yesterday because my car broke down, and so I reach out to people on all levels and our support people, and generally I see people who want to come to work, and that is my goal. But I also am very aware that that's a very tenuous thread sometimes. And we can, you know, it's something we need to work at every day from a command level on down.
Did the deputy give you the full experience?
Yesterday?
With the ride in the packs?
Yeah. Oh, well, he didn't turn on the lights and siren as we were going out my driveway. But other than that, yes, it was quite good. So I was just glad I didn't have to walk home yesterday.
Right. Let me ask you about the pandemic now. But before I do that, I'm so sorry. I've been keeping Mel Holding, who's been waiting to ask a question here on Voice
sure.
of the Public. 646-2212. That's 575-646-2212. Mel, thank you for waiting. What's your question for Sheriff Stewart?
Well, the question I have is we have a policy from the governor regarding masks, and then we have an ordinance from the county Board of County Commissioners. And the question I have for her is who is actually enforcing that?
Mel, you were reading my mind, Mel. That's exactly where I was going next. Good job.
Mel brings up such an important topic to us all.
Yeah.
Let me tell you that the ordinance that was passed by our county had some issues that concerned me about enforcement in terms of how it is written. You have to be very careful when you write legislation, and believe me, I'm not the expert on it, but when I was put in the position of possibly doing that enforcement, we had to look fairly closely at it. The other side of it is our position is that most people want to follow the law. Most people want to be law-abiding citizens. So the first thing I did, almost the first thing, was I was in touch with the governor's office, and I got 22,500 masks. And I drove myself to Santa Fe, picked them up, and brought them back, and we spent the next 8 or 10 days handing out 15,000 of them. And that is the education part. And every person we talk to, we mentioned the ordinance and said, we're telling you now, this is how important this is, that we want you to be able to follow the law, and we're giving you the tools essentially to do it. So please do it. So that said, July 3rd, which you know was last, Friday, the governor sent out a directive, but we just received it. And this is the second part of what Mel addresses, is can local law enforcement enforce her orders? And actually, they're the Department of Health orders, not the governor's orders directly. So that said, we have gotten some direction from the Attorney General now. He had to come down and weigh in on this and said, basically, local law enforcement can enforce mask provisions. Then we have the overlay of, does that extend to business owners who are not following, you know, allowing patrons in and who are unmasked? Do you see? So I think that I've reached out to our commission, and I think they're going to have some discussion next Tuesday about making some amendments to our local ordinance. And that, in addition to the July 3rd directive, I think we're going to be in a situation where we may feel comfortable at this point acting. I'm going to tell you, though, that I don't have, just like the river bottom, I don't have a lot of deputies who could sit, for instance, at Pickwick and watch unmasked people come and go and give citations, because you got to figure that's probably a 6 to 8 minute experience for every person we contact at minimum. So think of that. If you don't have your license or identification, who are we going to give the ticket to? There are just a lot of things, I think, because like one of the callers said, they've only talked to us once in all these years. Well, if you're not familiar with what is needed from us, it is kind of hard to say, well, gee, why don't you just? Well, I can tell you a few reasons why we don't just.
It seems like the support of city councils and county commissions in this effort is kind of the key, maybe to giving direction. And that was something that, as you know, I was watching the city council meetings when city council had an ordinance on the table that it really appeared that the council had the votes to pass that had enforcement teeth. But Chief Gallagher really didn't want to do that. How do you feel about it?
Well, when this first came to me and I addressed the Board of County Commissioners, I did point out that we have a lot of contact with the public in general. And so we do have our finger on the pulse and temperament. And we, at the time, didn't feel that we wanted to be a flashpoint. There are certain folks, and I've talked to one yesterday who is adamant that we are denying people their civil rights and under the Constitution and on and on. And that's their opinion, and I understand it. But there are people that are even far more extreme in their thinking. And I don't want us to walk, you know, have one of our contacts be that flashpoint where something really serious goes on, especially during the pandemic when we're trying to limit some of our more routine contacts. You know, we're not out giving people tickets for no tag lamps or, you know, license plate lamps. We're stopping people who are committing moving violations. So we've really made an effort to limit some of our routine contact, and then the mask ordinance was asking us to go back and make routine contacts. So we were also kind of, to say it clearly, between a rock and a hard place with some of this.
575-646-2212, the number to call. We just have a few minutes left. I can't believe how, I say this every week, I can't believe how quickly this hour went. But let's get to Shelley. She's been waiting with a question for Doñana County Sheriff Kim Stewart. Good afternoon, Shelley. Thank you for holding.
Hi. I'm a hospice nurse, and I drive all over the county seeing patients. And I've had to call on a few occasions for a welfare check, because I'll have a patient who will be in a home, and I'm ringing the doorbell and nothing's happening and I can't get in. So I've had to call to get someone to come out. And on the last call, I got an officer who told me, well, it's a hospice patient. And I'm like, yeah, it's the hospice patient. But that doesn't mean, something hasn't happened in the home. So I just wondered if is there like sensitivity training, or is there anything that when you have a call like that, because it really wasn't very helpful.
I understand, Shelley, and when you brought up the subject of training, and that is something that I was hoping we would get to spend a little bit of time on. So thank you for your question, and thank you for being a hospice nurse. Such an important time, families, and I know it's not easy work.
Yeah. I'm hoping that wasn't a deputy. When she said she spoke to someone, I'm not sure if she was speaking to dispatch. We go out on all welfare checks. We don't decide what's a welfare check is right or wrong or good or bad or appropriate or inappropriate. We go out on all of them. And I do, she brings up a very important point. I noted when I got in here that we went on a lot of unattended deaths. People who had passed in their home, and maybe a neighbor or a distant relative was calling. And one of the things we started was Amigos de Deso, where we were making, we assigned an amigo to one of our deputies. And those were generally people whose relatives may not have lived in the area. They may be only checked on occasionally by a neighbor, were housebound or shut in for various reasons, maybe no transportation, lack of funds. And we have them now. We do them by phone now because we didn't want to bring problems into their home with regard to the pandemic. And we call them. We call them once a week. And we have several of these individuals who generally, the rule or the regulation for that program is 60 or older. And we call them. So not only do we go on welfare checks, generally speaking, but we did recognize there was a problem. They were rather untethered individuals, and we kind of provide a lifeline. We would like to expand that to where our support personnel get involved and call, too, as the program expands. So that the other idea was, before the pandemic, that they may live in areas that we don't normally patrol, so it would get our vehicles, our footprint in those areas that normally we might not go into, and our car parked in that neighborhood even to visit an amigo for 10 or 15 minutes is valuable to that neighborhood. So it was a multi-pronged plan, and I'm putting it out there now. If the listeners believe that they have a good candidate for this, they can call Andrea, who runs that for us, and it's 575-525-8835, and she's happy to sign people up. So I'm hoping that Shelley's concern wasn't one of our deputies, and if it was, my extreme apologies. We go on all calls, and that is our policy.
All right. Thank you so much, Shelley, for your call today. And thank you to all who have participated. It is 1:59. So, Sheriff Stewart, we have 2 minutes, and I'd like to just give you an opportunity to add anything in terms of your major priority, your major struggle right now, just what you want the citizens of Doñana County to know about their policing.
Well, one thing I would like to bring up is House Bill 5, which did pass, and that is the creation of a Civil Rights Commission. And that will begin to sit hopefully fairly soon. That is made up of 9 members of the state and the governor. And that is a place where they could contact their representative or senator or whomever their local politician is and give some input about what they would like that commission to do. Because if you read the legislation, again, it's very broad, and I think it would be helpful to that commission to have some real specifics.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us today, Doniana County Sheriff Kim Stewart on Voice of the Public. Sure was a pleasure to have you. I think I'm glad that no one else accepted our invitation today. We wouldn't have had time.
Thank you, Casey. I sure appreciate you all. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.